Welcome back to Out of the Ether, episode 4, and I am still your host, Tim Brick. Before we get started with this week's episode, I want to talk about a podcast that I came across called Choose Your Struggle, hosted by Jay Schiffman. And each year, over 125,000 Americans die from overdose and suicide combined. There's massive changes that need to take place in this country and how we support and how we deal with mental health issues. I think anybody that's been paying attention has seen those numbers skyrocket since the beginning of this pandemic. It's a serious, serious issue in our country, and it needs conversation because that's where solutions start from, our open and honest conversations. And Jay has the experience, strength, and hope to host those conversations, and he does so on a weekly basis. It's an excellent, excellent podcast, and I highly recommend anybody that wants to join that conversation and be a part of that solution that you listen to and subscribe to the Choose Your Struggle podcast. And we'll be right back with episode 4. Very excited this episode. A little bit of a departure from what we normally do. We're not going to feature a song. We're going to feature a human being, and that human's name is Pete Cummings. Hi, Pete. Welcome to the studio.
Hey, Tim. It's great to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for trekking down here. Pete lives about, 480 miles north of here or something like that?
Yeah. It took, a plane, two buses, and a cab to get in the neighborhood, but what the hell?
Yeah, it's the beauty of living in Phoenix. You never leave town. You put, 1,000 miles a day in your car.
That's right.
So for those of you who don't know, Pete Cummings is, I'm going to say famous. I think you're famous.
Notorious.
Famously notorious radio personality in Phoenix for 25 years?
30.
30 years.
Yeah, in Arizona. A couple of those years were up in Sedona about 20 years ago, but largely here in Phoenix.
Well, that was a great segue to my first question. Where and when did you get started in radio?
I was just a lad. I took an interest in it. I was lucky in where I grew up in Brattleboro, Vermont. There was one of the two radio stations in Brattleboro that was a stone's throw from my parents' house. And so that's where I kind of got an interest. And then I had a friend in high school whose dad was kind of a bigwig at that radio station. He was one of the personalities. And I was actually DJing high school dances periodically, throwing everything in my parents' station wagon, the grocery getter. But
now, Now, back then, you were actually spinning probably vinyl discs, right?
There was some vinyl involved, decidedly. Even cassettes, if you can believe slipshod this operation was. and one of my lights was actually stolen from a road construction barricade, one of those flashing yellows, just beep, beep.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yep, anything to bring more of a light show to the kids. And I had a couple of lights that I borrowed from this guy at the radio station. So when I was done doing everything, I'd bring the lights back to him. And he was, of course, bottom of the totem pole. And he was board hopping stuff going on the overnight on the weekend. And so I would come in there, bring him his stuff, and just kind of look around and get fascinated with those reel-to-reel machines spinning stuff. And they were all automated and everything. And it was really interesting. And that was my first introduction to it. And then came out to Arizona State in January of 91. Started working at the college station there, KASR, and got lucky, started interning at KUPD also later that semester, spring of 1991, and weaseled my way in and got a job at KUPD part-time, then went full-time, and it's been a bumpy ride since.
Now, your degree from ASU, is it in communications
Bachelor's,
or broadcasting?
In,
or?
BA in broadcasting.
Okay.
So that was what kind of at least helped to organize my mind into that direction of trying to get myself established in radio. But it, as anything else in life, it's meant to be. It's a right place, right time thing. And the way I got my in, that really got me in, was I was looking, as a drummer, looking to get into a band. So I put up a bunch of flyers on AFU campus on the kiosks and eventually, now dig this, replaced a drummer in a band whom I eventually still retained a friendship with, and he was buddies with Larry Mack. He went to high school with Larry Mack, who at the time was working at KUPD. He was the assistant music director, and he did a Saturday night shift, And he was a good friend of this guy who I replaced in a band. And I got introduced and I started interning for him based upon a class I had at ASU. And that was my in. And that's how I eventually got hired at KUP to intern there for a couple of years. You know, you give up a half of your social life on weekends going in and answering the phones on a Saturday night. But it was totally worth it. Interestingly enough, Larry hosted the local music show and did a weekend shift, and there was a mutiny at one point in like 93 where Rob Trigg, who was kind of Dave Pratt's right-hand man, Trigg and Larry Mack jumped ship. Rob Trigg went to do mornings at KZRX, which was the Z-Rock affiliate. Okay. There was a flagship station in Dallas. I mean, like heavy, heavy, heavy music, which, you know, is awesome. It's great stuff. And Larry went to be the program director. So I was in the building in KUPD Monday morning. They split on a Friday, and because there was that space created, right place, right time, the program director said, hey, why don't you guest host the local show tonight? Just go to the local closet, pick out four cassettes from four bands. He goes, you can even play your band if you want. So the cool thing was, the very first time I was truly a host on the air in Phoenix, Arizona in 1991 or 92, very first time, the very first song I played on the radio in Phoenix was my band.
Oh, how cool is that? And you've been trying for 30 years to do it again, and no one let you.
Yeah, no, never got anywhere with that.
That's very odd. They let somebody let you play your own music on there.
Back when KUPD was like lawless. Yeah, but those were fun times. I slightly missed that. That was like in the 80s when, you know, it was a different time.
So did that impromptu gig then turn into you're on every day after that? Then was that your show? Was that your slot or?
I started. I got the local show on Monday night. After I did it, the program director was like, "Hey, you're perfect, dude. You can do this. You do it now." So Monday night at 11 o'clock, from 11 to 11:30, I did a local show, taped it ahead of time, and then he.
Now, do you like taping it versus being live?
I like being live far more.
Okay.
Far greater. No offense.
we are taping
we're
this.
We're on Memorex right now. Yeah, but that's
but fine. We're not stopping anything. So it's basically like
that's true. Yes, it is still technically it's got that vibe to it. And that's one thing that's cool about radio is when you know you're live, there's something different about it, you know, because you know you can't go back. So you got to keep rolling no matter what happens.
Right, yeah.
But so the program director, in addition to throwing me, his name is Curtis Johnson, amazing guy. I think recently retired. He was working at KRXQ in Sacramento. He was like managing that cluster there, I believe it was. And he gave me a shot, and then he put me on weekends. So I did a couple of years of weekends, and then eventually got the overnight shift, then got the night shift, then got afternoons, then, just like anyone else in radio, got fired from afternoons. And then a couple of years in Sedona, then back to Phoenix, did the night shift at KDKB, and then ironically enough got my old job back at KUPD, did okay. afternoons again. And then a year of mornings at KDKB, which was sacrificial lamb after a Heritage morning show, Tim and Mark, when they left.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, here, let's get this guy to alienate everyone for a year. And that's basically what happened.
Well, now, in radio, morning, that's the big slot, right? Or is it afternoon?
Yeah, that's the money slot.
They're both drive time slots. Right?
As far as the money goes, it's mornings, okay. afternoons, then middays, then nights.
Okay.
But now it seems like so few people are getting hired to do overnights or nights anymore.
It's all taped at this point?
It's all taped or just jockless or syndicated.
Right.
So those fringe glory on-air jobs in major markets are slowly going away.
Well, I think the whole industry, and I can't speak necessarily just to radio, but like the whole music industry has been dumped on its head. And not necessarily for the worst, I don't think. You know, there's a lot of things now about the music industry that have changed for the better. Like right now, we're sitting in my studio at my house, and I've got gear. I mean, I can produce any album from any artist that we want. They come in here, and they can record. You know, and out we can put it. I can master it. I can do all this stuff. 20 years ago, that would have been, I suppose I could have done it, but it would have been really hard. And we would have needed this much space just for the gear.
That's it. The gear is so, it takes up so much less space.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. So, a lot of what we talk about on this show is the process, and it's usually about the songwriting process and recording process and how a song goes from an idea, or that's where the name of the podcast came from, out of the ether and into your head and out of your fingers and onto your instrument and whatever. But I know doing a radio show, and you and I had talked about this recently, and I had mentioned to you, it's like, it's doing this podcast, which is pre-recorded. I do like one a week. I haven't even done one a week lately. I got some distractions.
One a week-ish.
Thank you. and I know how much time and energy I put into doing this. I can't imagine every single day. I mean, what's that process like? And how do you come up? Because I know when you're doing the afternoons, I love listening to you. By the way, you have one of the best voices in radio.
Thanks, my friend.
And I miss hearing it on the radio. But you always had different bits and different ideas and different things. And I know a lot of it was ad lib and you're going with the moment, but there was always, there's parts of the show that, I don't know if scripted is the right word, but I guess my thought was, how much time do you put in before a show, getting ready for it? How much, I mean, if you're going to do 2 hours of radio, does it take 8 hours to do it?
I mean, if you're doing a morning show, yes. And that was one of the most difficult things that I found when I was trying to prep for a morning show, because there's so much more pressure. You have to have so much more material. It's just constantly, you've got to be thinking of new stuff. And I did it when I was 35, and I was working harder, not smarter.
Right.
And I didn't receive a ton of direction, and it was my first morning show, and it was a major market, and it was there was way too much room for error, and not everyone at the station was pulling for me either. So that doesn't help either.
Sure.
When you've got other people in the building that are, it's like, ah, let's get rid of this guy. And eventually they
want that slot.
they get their wish. So when I'm doing, you know, the thing is, you know, the with the last gig that I was doing in afternoons, the directive anymore is just. My program director actually said one of the most telltale things to me about, you know, just how much you're supposed to be talking in afternoons with attention spans, what they are in 2021.
Yeah.
PPM is a term in radio. It refers to, like, you know, like people per minute, like, you know, how many people are listening at any particular moment, because they've really big brothered the technology now to figure out exactly who's listening and when and where. And my boss said to me one time, he goes, well, let's face it, you know, cracking the mic isn't exactly PPM friendly in afternoons. That means, like, yeah, no one wants to hear you. It's essentially the message, but we have to have somebody there, so you get to do it for now. And, of course, you know, then somebody else gets to do it later. It's like that old Bobcat Goldthwait line. He says, like, I lost my job. Well, I didn't lose it. I mean, I know where it is still. Just when I go there, there's this new guy doing it. But afternoons, there's,
see,
there's not
I don't
a lot
agree
of
with that thinking, though, because I like the connection. You know, if I find a we were talking about like Howard Stern. You know, that's the only reason I have satellite radio. I love listening to Howard. But I like the connection of another human being. There's a lot of times in the house, my wife and I are doing a whole bunch of projects. But we'll have like a live sporting event on. It could be a sport. It could be cricket. It's no offense to people that love cricket, but it could be something I could care less about. But there's something about knowing there's other human beings. I feel like they're connected. I'm sharing the room with them. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
No, it does.
This, and that's what
Global Village.
I miss that. Yeah, that's why I love when you find a radio personality that you like. Like I said, I used to love in the afternoons if I was out buzzing around. I didn't listen to. I'm like, hey, KSLX. I'm gonna listen to Pete.
I appreciate that, man.
And every once in a while, I would text you, hey, I'm listening to you right now. How you doing?
I remember
you
know? Them.
Do you have any free tickets?
Yes. that was the greatest perk in that industry, of course, is just going to just about everything for nothing, which is fun. And sometimes you get to take your friends. That was the greatest perk with tickets don't get picked up by 5 o'clock Dave show. I actually got a pair of front row tickets to see G3 with Joe Satriani, John Petrucci,
man.
And Phil Collin from Def Leppard one night. And just icing on the cake when stuff like that happens. But just circling back quickly, not a lot of show prep when you're not talking a lot. How much prep do you need to do? It's
right.
Just you need to be concise, you need to be quick, you need to be compelling. And it's almost like an incredibly, incredibly tall order. You have to create this 7-layer verbal wedding cake and deliver it in like 30 to 45 seconds and then get out. You know, get in, get out is the directive.
I remember one time coming, I think actually you called me up and said, I got some tickets. I don't remember what the show was. And so I ran down to the studio to get them. And I'll never forget, because you were doing your show. And you're like, yeah, come on in. And I'm thinking, really? I can be in here? And I'm in there.
I remember.
And you're like, look at the view out the window. Look, oh, hang on a second, Tim. Boom, you flip the mic and you're doing your thing. And then like, boom, off it goes. And then you turn right back around. Like, it's just you and I in your living room. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's been doing this a long time. There's no way I'd be like crapping myself, you know, if I knew I had to turn around and be live on a microphone like that.
Yeah, it just became very, very routine. You know, it's after so many years, you know, like anything else, ideally you get better at something the more you do it.
Well, hopefully. That's the plan anyway.
Yes.
So talking about tickets, I know over the years you've met a lot of amazing people. So give me one or two of the highlights of the different artists that you've got to meet.
Well, one story that I love is one of my favorite people in music is Dave Grohl, Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah.
And certainly, by the way, you guys, so make sure to vote them into the Rock Hall of Fame. Coming up here, vote.rockhall.com, and you can vote once a day. Make sure we get Iron Maiden and the Foo Fighters in, for God's sakes. Even though there's other goofy people on the ballot like Jay-Z and some other goofy ones. Oh, yeah, and Tina Turner. Get Tina Turner in. Devo, I think, is a possibility as well. But I would say Dave Grohl, the tour, it was like 2005. I was doing the morning show at the time. It was what was America West Arena then, you know, where the Suns play downtown. And Weezer was opening. And I wasn't a huge Weezer fan, but they gave a pretty good show. I liked them. And so because I got the morning show, I got to interview Grohl. Okay. And we got the obligatory picture with the band, too, and all that stuff. But the cool thing was I got to do the very first interview of everybody else that was standing there in line from all the other stations. I got to do the first one somehow. Just the fates aligned, and I got the chance to interview him first. And at the time, ironically enough, I was wearing this mustache muzzy combo. And, you know, of course, when very few people were, ironically enough, Grohl was also sporting a stash and muzzy at the
instant
time.
Instant bond.
And we totally bonded over that. And I remembered the last time they were in town, they were playing at the what was then the Dodge Theater, whatever the hell it's called, Comerica now, I think it's something else, Arizona Federal Theater or whatever. They were screwing around between songs, and they did a little bit of a Cygnus X1 from Rush. Bum, ba, do, da. And it was just, I got goosebumps listening to it, and they're big Rush geeks anyway. If you look online, you'll see there's footage of Alex Lifeson and Geddy Lee playing YYZ with Taylor Hawkins. They actually pulled it off one night. Taylor played the whole thing, played YYZ. But Dave was just so cool, so gracious. And every story you ever hear about Dave Grohl being just the most coolest, gracious guy in rock and roll, it's all true. It's all absolutely true. And I asked him jokingly, so are you guys going to whip out Cygnus X1 again tonight? You know, and he looked at me and he laughed and he said, he goes, dude, nobody knows a whole Rush song. Nobody. That was a great one. And then there have been so many. Another one I really enjoyed was meeting Tommy Chong, which was a real
treat.
I would
not expected that to be on your list.
Tommy Chong was a blast, and I did get a couple of interviews one time with Dick Cavett. Now I'm sounding like
I
a geezer.
I love Dick Cavett. I used to love watching that show.
Dick Cavett was the man. He was the cool host.
We are aging ourselves quite a bit.
We are
right now,
definitely.
You know,
well, it's very terrible to be a referencing Dick Cavett at this day and age when Dick is no longer doing a program.
But he told me two of the most amazing stories that I love to share, and I'll bore you with them real quickly. But it was cool to hear these firsthand from a guy who did these two things.
Yeah.
First one he told me about was back in like 72 or whenever Easy Rider was released. Mm-hmm. He went to see it in Times Square with Janis Joplin. So Janis Joplin and Dick Cavett watching it.
I would never
Easy Rider.
Imagine that couple together, by the way.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Just on a lark. She's like, yeah, I'm going to go check out Easy Rider with Dick Cavett. And Dick tells a story, and he's like,
and during the film, I heard nearby a sound like a glug, 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 thinking there was something wrong with the plumbing in the theater, but it turned out to be the sound of a pint of Southern Comfort being poured into a paper cup.
and insisted it didn't affect her at all. Yeah, so what a story, right?
Yeah.
Hanging next to Janis Joplin while she's drinking SoCo out of a cup, watching Easy Rider in the theater in Times Square. Woo! And the other one is one of my favorite people of all time that I always wanted to meet, whom you bear a bit of a resemblance to right now, is Groucho Marx.
I don't think it's a compliment, but all right.
No, it is. Groucho's the man. Groucho was the absolute bomb. I loved him, but he actually took Groucho, Dick Cavett took Groucho in the 60s to a seance when that was the rage in Hollywood, and he was trying to get Groucho to be reverential. You know, he's like, yeah,
these people are here to speak to their dead relatives, so be a little reverential. And of course, you can't tell that to Groucho because he's like, oh, I'm going to have some fun.
I was going to say, you just set him off. Yeah,
totally. Just teed him up. Yeah, and he said they were all sitting around, you know, in the dark room with all the candles and the you know, the medium with the crystal ball and the turban. I am now in contact with the spirit world. Is there anyone here who has a question? 10 beats of silence. And then Groucho pipes up and goes, yes, what's the capital of North Dakota?
Did he get an answer?
they chased him out, apparently, according to Dick Cavett. Like, so, yeah, a lot of fun stuff.
Serious.
Yeah, no, they couldn't be taken seriously at all. And nor should you take life. But no, there are millions. I love talking about it because they've just been, you know, especially a lot of musicians, people that I grew up listening to,
right,
get a chance to interview. And it's surreal.
Well, I'm going to guess, just because he's a local icon and hero, Alice Cooper. Spent any time with him?
Many times.
Yeah.
Very many times. And Alice is great. He is. He's like a Dave Grohl. He's one of these eternally gracious guys. You'll never hear anyone tell a bad story about any interaction with Dave Grohl or Alice Cooper, for sure. And he does so much for the community, and he's just gracious and professional and slick and cool and mm-hmm. clever, and he's everything, man.
I agree.
And just all he does is keep getting better.
Sure.
Yeah. He's in amazing shape, and, you know, sobriety helps.
Yeah.
But no, Alice is incredible, and he's always sweet and gracious and funny, and you can't say anything bad about the guy.
Wayne's World was on the other night. You know, there's that great scene where they go backstage with Alice Cooper. And as I'm watching that, I haven't spent a lot of time with him, but I've been, you know, around him because he's all over in Phoenix. And if you're a musician, it seems like you eventually are going to cross paths with Alice Cooper somewhere. And Christmas Pudding, I've worked on a few times and got to spend
into him in a grocery store once, if you can believe that.
Oh, no, I totally believe it. Yeah. He would buy his own groceries. Absolutely.
Yep. He was totally in there.
Melons. Yeah,
it was the Safeway at like Camelback and 32nd or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But yeah, as you would imagine, Alice was being as gracious as ever while being accosted by someone who recognized him in produce. So, but again, I don't know anyone could ever say anything, a sullen word about Alice Cooper because he's one of the greats.
No, he's just a wonderful human being. And I think I stopped it before we started talking about this, but I was referencing Wayne's World because in that scene, for anybody who's never met Alice Cooper, been around him, that's kind of Alice Cooper. You know, it's like, come on down, sit down on the couch. Let's talk about history. Let's talk about whatever, what's going on in your life. Da, 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 da. One of the most endearing, ingratiating, just humble, wonderful human beings you ever meet. No, absolutely. So we're talking about these great people that you got to meet. So who was the big a-hole? Who was the big idol that you met and you thought, wow, what an incredible disappointment as a human being? Because I know it's happened, Pete. Come on, spill the beans.
I had one, when I did the morning show, I had one disastrous interview, and it was the very first one, the first day that we did. So it was like the mulligan. I had to get it out of the way. And it was a tough one because the guy...
You don't get mulligans in live radio. What are you talking about?
No. Oh, geez, dude. It was so bad. I'm so glad I don't have it because it was just... I hate to think it was a harbinger of what that entire year experience eventually turned out to be, but I guess it was. But I had to interview, and can you imagine if you're not on your A game and you have to interview somebody that might be a tad cantankerous?
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Made me think of something real quick. It's
sure.
Still part of the story, but did you have a lot of people who were not sober when you interviewed them? When you said cantankerous,
Well, not at you know, like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 a.m. in the morning. Most people are usually on their A game. Most people. There was a couple of comedians that came in that were playing the improv. I could tell, you know, probably
hadn't been to bed yet.
hit the wet bar the beverage fridge in their room before they got in the limo and came down to the radio station. But can you imagine if you needed a softball interview for yourself to kick things off, who would you want? You know, somebody like a Patton Oswalt or maybe like a comedian or somebody like that? Or would you like the drill sergeant from Full Metal Jacket? Arlie Ermey.
Oh, you literally had the drill sergeant from Full Metal Jacket.
Yes, I did. Okay. Arlie Ermey.
And he was in character?
That's the thing. He got that gig. He really was drill sergeant in the Marines, I guess it was, or the Army. And he was initially on set. There was somebody else cast in his role, and he was hired as a consultant, somebody to coach this guy on how to grill these guys like a drill sergeant. And the director was so impressed. He said, dude, you do this role. And so that was
he's had a pretty good career since then though.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff, but Full Metal Jacket was the one that launched his career, and he was unforgiving. And it was just, you know, we he didn't you know, he was as tough as his character in Full Metal Jacket or anything else you've seen him in. And, oh, it was terrible. And he was unforgiving and not gracious either. But, you know, granted, you know, a guy that age, what he's achieved in his life, yeah. You know, he doesn't want to waste his, goddamn time with these greenhorns. God damn it. So, yeah, that was a terrible one. And there was one time I had Andrew Dice Clay in studios at KUPD, and he was performing in Phoenix and, of course, has to bring his freaking posse with him. And that was an interview that I lost control of because there was like, you know.
Because of the posse?
There's three, four guys egging Dice on, you know, and yada, yada. And there was a couple of S-bombs that came out, and it was live radio, and I didn't have a dump button. So that just aired. This is back in the 90s when you could get away with that. But yeah, there's been some more good ones than bad ones, but man, those bad ones sting. You never forget those.
So no moments where you got to finally meet an idol and were disappointed. They've all lived up to your expectations.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody that was like, you know, extremely, you know, disrespectful or dismissive or anything like that. Most of them, because they're still out there because they realize, oh, the radio guy, I got to be cool with the radio guy. You know, if it was okay. If it was like some fan, like in some cattle call thing.
That's probably true, yeah, because under the context to which they're meeting you, they're like, well, somebody's going to hear this story because this is what the guy does for a living, so I better make it a good story.
Yeah,
that's
they're
true.
Usually on their best behavior for the radio interviews, but... Couple of them been fun. I remember one time interviewing David Lee Roth on his tour bus when there was the Sam and Dave tour, when Sammy Hagar and David Lee Roth were touring together. It was like 2003 or something like that. And I got flown to Albuquerque to see the show there to try and hype it up on the radio. And I interviewed Sammy before the show, and I had a couple of sodas at the show and was on the tour bus with Dave afterwards. And Dave was more out of his mind than I was. So it was, I wish I could find that mini disc with that interview on. Because I had to edit the hell out of myself more than Dave. But that was a great memory too. And just, it's a life of privilege when you get to do that, when you get lucky enough to get into that upper echelon in a major market and you get to all, it's just like a parade of all these people that, you know, if you're in a format that you enjoy, it's amazing. But, you know, most of them, again, in the context of, oh, I got to talk to radio guy. All right. Hey!
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, they've got to, you got always got to remember the context too, because if, and people know whether or not they're kind of infringing on somebody's privacy or personal space and stuff, but if they're really big fans or something like that, they just, I don't care. It's my only chance. Oh my God, I got to meet them.
Yeah.
You know, fortunately, I don't really have much idea of what that's actually like on that side of it, but it's a thing where, I think sometimes you get people in the public eye, sometimes you got to give them some slack too, because, you know, when you're on display most of the time and anytime you leave the house and, you know, you have to be on and that right. wears you out too.
No, that's very true. So let's segue a little bit into your other passion, love, career, music.
Indeed.
You are a drummer.
I is.
You didn't start as a drummer though. You started as a piano player.
I did. I took like 10 years of piano, and then when
do
I was
you
like,
still play piano?
I have an electric piano at the house, and so I will tickle the ivories sometimes, and just try and remember stuff and keep my chops up. But I can't jam, but I know a bunch of old standard tunes. And right around the age of 14, 15, I got the urge to just start hitting stuff. You know. Unmaligned youth,
yes.
Unmaligned youthful aggression, male aggression, and loved the drums because it was like, well, you don't have to worry about what key you're in or whether you're hitting the right note or not. Just hit stuff on time.
Right.
And then just fell into the drum thing from there. And when I came out here, you know, and naturally, as you would imagine, being radio guy and looking to pursue musical opportunities, sometimes, you know, one helps the other. And I was definitely the beneficiary of that for a lot of opportunities.
Well, I do have a little clip of you playing Won't Get Fooled Again, I think at Cooperstown. Yes. You want to tell us about this gig?
Yeah, and I think this was Neil Williams on vocals, tremendous singer, Bill Dutcher on guitar, Shane Martinez on the bass. This was...
He's one of my favorite bass players in town.
Oh, Shane's fantastic. Yeah. He's great
player. He seems to play in almost every band you're in.
Yeah,
was I the one exception?
Yeah.
You were stuck with
just
me.
Just about, man. Yeah, honest to God. Honest to God. Yeah, Shane's just been, I've played with the guy probably over 20 years now, on and off for the most part. But this was at Cooperstown, when Cooperstown was still a thing, which was a wonderful, wonderful venue. And this was when Motley Crue came to town. Alice was the opening act, and they were playing at the arena right across the street from Alice Cooperstown. So we were kind of, the Pete Band was kind of the band for those that couldn't get into the concert. This was like the party happening right next to the concert.
Okay.
And then it was going to be the site of, like, you know,
so it was a high energy night then.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a fun.
So it was
night,
supposed to be an after party kind of thing. And then Alice and his band came and played after us. So, so we were technically opening for Alice Cooper that night.
All right. Well, let's listen to Pete do his Keith Moon impersonation here on Won't Get Fooled Again. Got another clip of you with a band called Drop Diesel. Now, is that your band, or is that somebody you, another band that you just joined, you sat in for the night? And this looked like you were playing out at, I forget what it's called, but out by the stadium. There was like a big event out there, out by Cardinal Stadium. So I was looking at some video footage on this.
Oh, it might have been at the Goodyear Ballpark. It was
maybe it was
Muscle Kings event when we got to open for Night Ranger and 38 Special.
Ooh,
that day.
That's a fun ticket.
Yeah. That was a really fun day.
Yeah,
especially for a cover band. But yeah, that's been a great band that it was kind of put together. Fred Vernietti and was in another band that I joined for a little while, and then we had a couple of personnel changes and. It became Drop Diesel. It's weird. It started with four guys, and the guitar player and I are the only two still there from that. There's a different singer and bass player right now. So, but it's a fun. It's like kind of like a KUPD cover band. We play a lot of heavy stuff, and yeah. We just love ripping that up and playing loud.
Yeah. No. It's funny you say you got a new singer, because I was going to comment on this clip here anyway. I thought the singer was fantastic. I didn't recognize the guy. I don't think I know him. But
Bobby Sisk. Yeah, okay. Guy's got amazing pipes.
Oh, yeah.
He can throw it out there.
No, he's belting it out. And I heard some backing vocals. Are you singing on that band? Because I know you love to sing.
I think it's me and, yeah, maybe Ruben.
You're
I'm
Phil
not sure
Collins of Phoenix. You just love to sing away while you're playing the drums. Like
or the dude from the Romantics.
Well, let's listen a little bit of Drop Diesel.
Sure.
From Phoenix, Arizona, Drop Diesel!
Okay, so I've got one more clip. Mainly I grabbed this one because one of my all-time favorite artists is Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, yeah.
And I found a clip of you. I think you did a trio for a while. It looked like Shane was probably playing bass.
And that's Bill. Yep, Bill Dutcher
on
the guitar. Yes,
oh,
sir.
Fantastic, by the way. I mean, anybody that's willing to stand up in front of thousands of people and cover a Stevie Ray Vaughan song, hats off to him. But he does a great job, you know, Pride and Joy. And that was Arizona Bike Week. You play there a lot.
Yeah, I've been very, very fortunate over the past 5-6 years to get a few chances to get on the big stage with a couple of my bands. And this clip, if it's the three of us as trio, this is us opening for Ted Nugent,
it is,
all people.
Because, again, I took all these were videos on YouTube, and, you know, so I pulled the audio off them. But watching the video, I could see the kit behind you, and it said Ted Nugent on the kick drums.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
And that was Wild Mick Brown. That was his kit that night. So I got to share the stage with Mick that night, which has happened a few times over the years. Also an incredibly cool guy, local drummer, although he's largely retired now. I think Mick actually sold his big kit, like, you know, the Mick kit. He just recently sold, so now he's enjoying retirement. And but you might catch him out and about in Cave Creek on any given Saturday or Sunday afternoon.
There are a lot of, especially older musicians that live in Phoenix. I think what it is, at least that's my assumption anyway, close proximity to LA, where, you know, still probably the mecca for the music industry. Nashville is probably a close second, or maybe they're 1A and 1B. But yet, like a third of the cost of living, and you don't get accosted as much here. You know, in LA, everybody's kind of celebrity hungry. You know, if you we talk about like Alice going shopping, you can do that in Phoenix. For the most part, no one's going to say a word to you, and they're not even going to recognize you. You do it in LA, and you're going to wind up signing 80 autographs before you get back home.
That's right.
So it's funny when you said that. I was just in my mind, I was like, the Rolodex was flipping. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of great musicians here. You know,
there are
big time, like world class, well known musicians that you pass on the street, and you know, there's a Leia does my wife's hair, and it seems like half of Bruce Springsteen's band lives in Phoenix, and they all get their hair done there. You know, it's just, it's funny. Yeah, definitely. So, Pete, first of all, thank you very much for making time to come down and hang out with me today. I really
it's always
it.
A pleasure, man. And
is there anything else you wanted to add? Anything I didn't ask you that I should have asked you? Because you are the professional interviewer. I'm new at this. So.
Now, I just want to say if your listeners are painfully unaware, I must decidedly make them aware of the thing that brought you and I together was playing in this band called Crooked Grin a dog's
true.
Age ago,
yes.
And had the absolute privilege of opening up, speaking of my musical endeavors, one of my finest moments, and I would say quite possibly having provided direct support for Paul Rodgers might have been my most coveted performance slot. And I've had a bunch, but to be direct support for Paul freaking Rodgers, it was right up there, right in definitely the top three, man. And that was you and me up there, buddy.
That was the two. That was fantastic. And that was what was that? Chesterfield's? What was the name
of
that?
Chester's Harley Davidson, which is now Desert Wind Harley out in Mesa.
And it
Country
sounds
Club.
Funny because, like, you say to somebody, oh, we play, it was at a Harley dealer. And I think they're picturing, like, you know, you're set up on the sidewalk. This was like a 20 foot in the air stage, man, the rigging for that thing because of Paul Rodgers.
Yes.
And there were thousands of people. They, like, shut down. I think they were flowing out. There was cop cars, like, in the streets directing traffic around the parking lot we were in. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, they did it right at that dealership. They set themselves up with a natural venue. Granted, it's a parking lot, and it's GA usually, but they've got a huge one side of like this warehouse, and they have that concrete stage there, but it's perfectly set up for bands. I've opened for ironically enough, I've opened for 38 Special twice, and once was also at that dealership, and the Outlaws opened for the Outlaws there, and it's a really great spot, and when they do it right and they do shows out there, it's a cool venue.
That pretty much sounds like a list of bands that would open at a Harley dealership, by the way.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And I like all those bands. I'm not
or AZ Bike Week, and
I do have one more question for you. You got to explain this to me. Testicle Festival and Barbecue Showdown.
Yes, that was an amazing thing up in Payson. There's the casino up there, Matazal Casino, and they did a testicle festival, and the Pete Band got to go up there. And it was literally a festival celebrating bull testicles. And I saw some and what they looked like cooked, and there were some people eating them, but I couldn't bring myself to actually put a ball
so,
in my
so
mouth.
The bull testicle, did that flow into the barbecue showdown? I mean, is that what they were barbecuing, or was
I guess,
that separate?
Well, there was
other parts of the bull that you could
God
eat.
Thank God there was other barbecue happening that was not, you know, just solely testicles.
Okay.
So there was some, you know, and there was a lot of, like, you know, food trucks there, barbecue people. And also, I hung out a little bit with Brady Bogan from KUPD's morning show.
Brady Bogan.
And because he's got some tremendous hot sauces, and he was up there as part of this thing.
I love hot sauce.
So we bought a bunch of those and stuff. So, yeah, that was the last time I got to hang out with Brady. That was a couple of years ago, but wonderful event. It was awesome. Obviously, COVID's kind of put the kibosh on just about everything fun anymore, but that's a fun event. If you want to get out of town for a little while, and it's a beautiful drive
up to
Payson.
Well, so that's an ongoing event. It was successful enough to do it again?
I think
it's kind of a rock out with your cock out kind of event, right?
Yeah, I don't think this was the first testicle festival, but... you know, I think that they could decidedly do it again. It'd be like Testicle Festival 2, Electric Boogaloo. I mean, two
good
testicles.
Things, the good things come in pairs.
Yeah, they call it the Two Testies Festival, or Testies 2.
Testies do. Testies dose. Dose testies.
Testies 1, 2, God. 2, 1, 2. Is this thing on?
Now, real quick, and I know we were wrapping up like 5 minutes ago, but that's usually how our conversations go. You did mention, you know, obviously we're the pandemic, COVID-19, coronavirus, everything people have been suffering through for the last 12 months. What's it like? Because you are still a performing musician. I'm not. I'm a studio rat these days. So are you able to play out, or kind of how's that looking?
Been very fortunate. Some venues are still setting things up to be socially distant, and I have this privilege of playing this one amazing venue in Cave Creek called Janie's, and it's an outdoor setting, and they have the, I forget which number it is, like the right class liquor license. I only missed gigs. We were there once a month, and it's a great, great gig, and we only missed it, believe it or not, in March and April of last year, and then by May, he had it figured out, and the restrictions were such that I still played there once a month from May through the rest of the year. I was just there again last weekend.
And you're playing outdoors?
Though, yeah, it's outside, okay. So you got a weather. And it was a little chilly the last couple of gigs when we played in December and last weekend. But you'd be amazed how many people come out for it. It's just a cool vibe there. And I've had a couple of private gigs here and there, and I've been able to sub with a few other bands playing the place like Lucy's Sage and Sand, where it's pretty easy to socially distance. That place is huge and a great stage out there as well. But I'm not playing as much as I'd like. That's right. For sure, though. I would much rather be out every weekend. There have been those gigs here and there that have, you know, kept my chops up and put some ramen in the bowl for me as well here and there.
Well, Pete, thank you again very much for coming out and spending time with me today. I really appreciate it, being on the podcast.
I appreciate that, my friend. Thank you so much for having me. And you guys, please, whenever you get the opportunity, even before, you know, the masks are gone and everyone's vaccinated or herd immunity or whatever the hell is going to happen, make sure you get out there and support live music, because there are people out there that need this industry to bounce back. All the stage hands, all the lighting and sound people, and the artists themselves. Let's make sure that we kickstart that industry back into where it should be sooner rather than later. And you guys rock. Thanks for your attention.
Yeah, thank you. And we're going to leave you today with Pete and Shane and who was the guitar player?
And Bill Dutcher.
Shane Ramirez? Is that his last name?
Martinez.
Martinez. Yep. I was close.
Right.
Ethnically, I was close anyway.
They all sound like to me.
He was a great bass player. We're going to leave you with the three of them doing Stevie Ray Vaughan, Pride and Joy. Thank you very much for joining
us. Thanks, brother. Shine, she my sweet little thing. She's my pride and joy. She's my sweet little baby. I'm her little lover boy. Well, I love my baby, my heart and soul. Love like ours, it won't never grow old. She's my sweet little thing. She's my pride and joy. With her, you see a man get mean. She's my sweet little thing. She's my pride and joy. She's my sweet little baby.